Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Sentimental Garbage, a podcast where we talk about the culture we love that society can sometimes make us feel ashamed of. My name is Caroline, and I'm a collection of pagan mouth sounds. Joining me is author and the thing you listen to while getting a massage, Sloane Crossley.
Hello! What a delight to be here.
What a delight to talk about Enya.
Oh, yes. Well, what an honor, truly. And we can keep on using adjectives, but I mean this, or nouns. I don't know which is which. I'm a writer. But I think that... to talk to an Irish person about Enya and a culturally savvy person who probably, I feel like I'm a little bit out of my depth here, out of my league talking about Enya with anyone from Ireland, but I'm excited.
So this is the fascinating thing, and we'll get into your background in a second. Literally, we had a podcast a couple of episodes ago where Siobhan McSweeney, one of the stars of Derry Girls, she made a kind of a very offhand reference to Enya where she was like, oh, you know how everyone thinks we are, like fucking riding around like Enya on a horse. And I realized that we're like this anti-snobbery podcast. It's all about reclaiming stuff. And there was me and Siobhan just taking the piss out of Enya. And I was like, we are not practicing what we preach.
I think aside from me, you two probably have sold more albums than Enya.
Yes.
Or no.
Yes.
So maybe not.
She's, I think.
Like, you have to respect the sales figures of Enya.
You absolutely do. And I think. You know, Enya's obviously, she arrived and then she was always there, like Tom Hanks or somebody. She arrived right. And into the public consensus and then she never left. And right. Every now and then she spikes and it's like, oh, she's doing a Lord of the Rings soundtrack or whatever. But she's never left, you know. It's like she's a shorthand for a certain kind of music and a certain kind of mood that you must be in to listen to that kind of music.
She's parked that horse in your imagination and now that's where she lives.
Exactly.
But I have to say, I first heard of Enya through my coolest cousin.
Okay, so bring
which
me back.
Is a shock.
Give me the year, the day, what you were wearing, what you're reading, everything.
Okay. So I'm gonna say way early 90s. I'm probably 12, somewhere between 11 and 13, which for those listening at home is 12.
It's a maths podcast.
Hey, everybody.
Love it.
But I had a cousin who lived in Syracuse, which is a sort of mid-sized city, excuse me, in upstate New York. And she was just very cool. She was my first exposure to the kind of person who had a first exposure to everything. Mm. So she seemed to know about everything about 3 or 4 months in advance. She developed earlier than everyone else. So, you know, much to the chagrin of her parents, was sort of sneaking out of the house. But they even had this cool house, like from the movies, that one could sneak out of. You know, you could find the sturdy branch and sort of slide down it that was sort of connected to your bedroom window. And she had one of these bedrooms. I've actually never seen anything like it. It was just a sort of old house that had a sort of second room off of it.
Oh, like a suite?
Like a smaller room. Yeah, like a suite.
She had an antechamber?
She did. It makes it sound huge. It was not a big bedroom. It just was perfect for a little girl or a teenage girl who, you know, I'm sure it was stuffed animals when she was little and probably drug paraphernalia as she got older. But it's that kind of dream. Like, I mean, I live in a New York City apartment. I still dream that, you know, it's a wonderful / horrible dream we all have, that you're going to sort of touch a panel on the back of your closet and just a small bedroom, an extra bedroom will be there, or an extra closet. And she sort of lived it and I thought she was the coolest. And our family was visiting, and we stayed over, obviously, several nights. And I stayed in like a, on the sort of sofa in her room, which again, massive.
Sofa in the room.
Exactly. Massive.
I'm imagining like, such an, just, like an American teen dream, like Kelly Kapowski on her landline phone in the bedroom, sort of twiddling around the long cord, you know?
Right, yeah. And it's a see-through phone, you know?
Yes!
With like, neon inner workings.
Like, oh, still the dream.
Yeah, maybe a Swatch watch the size of an elephant. Yeah, I mean, it's really... It was like that, and I did not grow up like that. I grew up very sort of in a small, boring home. Sorry to my parents. But anyway, so we were going to sleep, and she's like, I've been doing this thing lately where I listen to music when I sleep. And I thought, okay, that's going to be really distracting, because even at that, you know, young age of between 11 and 13, I was quite sensitive to like go. I had to sleep like basically in like a sensory deprivation tank.
Yes, yes.
And she played Enya's Shepherd Moons. And I was like, what is this? I just had never heard anything like it. I was completely enchanted and entranced. And it's still what I use to fall asleep. And I should say that history is sort of corrected itself. It's not that my cousin isn't a lovely human being, but like she had a lot of inspirational quotes and posters and things like that, like looking back, that like, that weren't so cool. It wasn't like the Rolling Stone and like Jesus and Mary Jane. It was like, you know, like she just didn't have that great taste in music. but she exposed me to Enya, and so I thought, I still think, like, I'm like, this is the way to relax, this is the correct way.
That is such a specific kind of...
It's so specific.
...of child for her to be. Like, the idea, like, the idea of, like, the cool cousin who's got tits already, like, playing you records, and it's like, maybe it's, like, Annie DeFranco or the Indigo Girls. Like, that, right. That I have a picture for, like, in my head.
Well,
like,
I went to an all-girls camp, so I could already check that up. I think the time period Enya... I don't know about the other... I'm not that familiar with the other albums, but the time period... that Shepherd Moons came out, it was like definitely Mariah Carey, definitely R.E.M. I'm trying to think of other, it's like pre-Tori Amos, but Amy Grant. But there, like if you listen to all that kind of music, I feel like there is a bit of like a synth,
yes,
like breathy soul. And it's like this was like she had... taken the cappuccino and just skim the foam off the top and just giving you like a full, like, this is what you're actually looking for when you're looking to have this sort of like fake dramatic Merchant Ivory experience.
Yes. And it's this instant romance and this thing of like not having lyrics that are necessarily instantly recognizable, or even if they're in English, instantly mean anything. But it's this sense of like conjuring a landscape and it being like a portal to an inner world, you know? It's...
Absolutely. And that inner world is the inner world of a mermaid. It's just so like...
Yeah, I just like...
It's just... And it's that new... It's also...
the inner world I think of a mermaid.
It's really true. It's like the inner world of like... I don't even know, like fairy electronica. I don't know what it would be called. But what's weird is because it's so, I mean, you have to love, you know, and I know that you, this is part of why you do this podcast, is that you have the thorough appreciation for something that is not on the fence. It is just going for it.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And I bet that if I were to speak to her, which I would not because she doesn't do interviews, but if I somehow she let me into the door of her castle and I got past the like crushed velvet rope that Shirley
and the 3D painting of a unicorn and a waterfall.
The 3D painting, it's on velvet, it's not a big deal. She actually probably has like a very minimalist style with like Picasso's and Eames chairs and just nobody knows. But I think that I know I would never want to, because it's like never meet your heroes here, because I'm sure I appreciate her incorrectly. And I'm sure any musician or artist would say that, you know, that's not true. But I just feel like it's too, I have too camp an entry point.
Yes.
For Enya, even though the introduction was quite serious, but quite serious from like, what, a 15-year-old girl who used it to fall asleep, like...
I love sure the idea of a 15-year-old girl in like the early 90s who already has like a meditation practice in place.
I know. She did. She also had these posters on her wall from this brand that I think was American Malls only, called Successories, which is basically inspirational posters for classrooms. But they actually did quite well, you know, like desk calendars, things like that.
Oh, right, right, right.
That would say a single word and then give some marketing person's definition of what that word meant. So it would be like risk, courage, love. And then you would have something underneath. And she had one, I think it was courage, had a picture of a sailboat at night. Very Enya. In the sort of gloomy blue moonlight, you know, and it said, I'll never forget, it said, we cannot explore new oceans unless we have the courage to lose sight of the shore.
Wow.
And I remember thinking, yeah, she's so deep and her boobs are so big.
She's felt the depth and the history of womanhood through those new titties.
I did. I was like, wow.
It's so funny when you witness like an inspirational quote for the first time as a young person whose like brain is beginning to stretch,
right?
And they can really just be a combination of any sort of words put together, like, you know, the whole footprints in the sand thing. I remember the first time I heard footprints in the sand at a wedding, I was like, what the fuck? When there was one set of fucking footprints, Jesus carried you, oh my god.
But the footprints in the sand thing at least involves a riddle, which is more sophisticated, I think, than
just
a bad
quote
analogy.
And a sailboat.
Yeah, just like, hey, things about boats. Sometimes you know they get rocked. Sometimes you rock them. You know, I think Fitzgerald said that.
Beautiful.
I just don't know how you like.
All right, so you've had the most transformative artistic sleepover of your life.
Truly,
are you you leave and you're like saying to your parents, we gotta go to a music shop. We gotta get Enya.
I think I knew, first of all, appreciation for the time period that there was no downloading involved. Yes. We have to go to ye old music shoppy and pick up a CD or a tape.
I realized I was struggling. I was like, what's an American music shop? And I was like, Empire Records? No, that's a film.
No, that's a film. Virgin, Sam Goody. I don't know. I don't know where we bought. That's a really good quote. Where did we buy music? I don't know, just sort of appeared on mixtapes, I think. I think it was a private respect. I think that I knew, because we have our own sort of version of this, which is probably Yanni.
Yes, I'm aware of Yanni.
Or a modern version, although I think he's sort of quite charming and sort of has a kind of unquestionable sort of universal talent, the voice of an angel, is Josh Groban.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But still, you wouldn't be like, do you know what I'm going to do tonight? I'm going to go to a Josh Groban concert and or have you over for dinner and only listen to Josh Groban. I think Josh Groban would probably be upset by this. And similarly, I think Enya would be. But like, I think I just sort of kept it for myself, and somehow, it definitely was CD. I just obtained the CD. I purchased the CD at some point. And then it worked so well that for a long time, I could not tell you what was on the second half of the album because I used it to fall asleep. But now I've like listened to it a little more, but it's still like, I'll put on like if there's construction in my apartment, like noise canceling headphones, fire up the Enya, take a very nice 30-minute nap. And I'm not humiliated by it because...
No, you shouldn't, and you shouldn't be.
It's so part... Well, you should be humiliated by anything you like. I feel like there is, like, not to undermine the entire concept of the podcast, but, like, I do feel like there should be or is no... are no more guilty pleasures.
Yeah, no, I think we
right?
I think,
like, if it's a pleasure, as long as it's legal, we're
but
cool.
At the same time, I do kind of feel like... We're all fine with liking what we like. It's like, hey, you know, have fun, whatever. But it's like attaching critical consensus to these little people that we were when we loved these things so much, and these feelings were so huge. And then we kind of, as we get older, we develop this sort of shell, and we understand these cues from different people of like what is cool or not cool. And when you first realize that Enya isn't cool, and then you subvert it into being like an ironic thing about yourself, and then you you subvert it into being like, the funny thing about me is that I'm Sloane Crosley and I'm this like incredibly erudite essayist who's very famous for her like wry, dry sense of humor, but also I like the most sincere instrumental Irish Celtic music ever. It's like a fun fact, right? Like
it's true. But it's true. I know exactly what you mean. And I actually also really appreciate the idea of that sort of laundering of our tastes. Do you know, like the end, yes, that we have to maybe, and even the things that come to us now, you have to sort of work out all the angles and go through this digestive process about how you like it, what part of you likes it, you know, is this part of a scene? Are you rejecting the scene? Whereas the things you like when you're little become a little more indelible.
Yeah.
I mean, there is, I suppose, that pressure on adults sometimes, especially, frankly, any kind of artist, a writer, a musician, or I don't think this happens to scientists that much, but who get asked, you know, Q&As for magazines. There's, yes, this pressure to feel cooler than you were earlier than you were, you know, and say, oh, yeah, my first concert was something great, when maybe your second concert was something great and your first concert was like, I don't know, hypothetically Rusted Root, you know, I don't know. It's just not important. But the thing that, like, I just feel like, but Shepherd Moon's, I just don't know why Americans, I haven't really had the NU conversation with anyone else. This is like a sort of a virginal experience. I don't think I've talked about this with anyone in my entire life. Like, this is not a known thing amongst my friends. Like, we're going to get Sloane an Enya-themed birthday cake or an Enya-themed party.
Oh yeah, it's past 12, so right. I'm talking about Enya again.
Although, by the way, an Enya, my birthday is tomorrow, and if my friends throw me an Enya-themed birthday party, I would be so happy, but I don't think no one knows.
First of all, happy birthday. Thanks. Second of all, very easy to get together, I think, because like all you have to do is go into any sort of regional suburban mind body spirit type of shop, of which like it doesn't matter how small the town is, there's one of them kind of thing, where there's like two fairies in porcelain over a crystal bowl, and like tarot and like a little crystal shelf, and like it's all part of the Enya experience.
Yes. Yes.
And like, I'm so fascinated by this sort of Irish-American divide, right? Because Enya is one of these artists who, it happens a couple of times, but like it happened with like Glenn Hansard as well, where she almost, we sort of ship her off on the famine boat. And there's like this response to the US that Ireland becomes very flattered, but very baffled by. And because I was born 1990, so like by the time I was a teenager, Enya was already a joke,
right?
And this thing that we thought of as like vaguely sort of shameful and being like, oh, this is what Americans think of us. They think that we sort of like live in these strange painterly music videos surrounded by sprites, wearing like long belted velvet gowns with like a little Celtic thing in the middle, and like, and that was something to be like pushed away from, and it was like a tool to make fun of Americans with,
right?
Which was very the style of the time.
Like, and then actually like, also sort of, you know, it's that whole, you know, be careful if you're holding a hot coal because you get burned. Like if it becomes a tool for yourself too, because when I hear you talk about it, it's so funny because Enya had a real place of like in like the breathy reverb of new age music. You know, I think, yes, that, I don't know if she ever hit the charts. If she did, I doubt. I mean, did I hear her, you know, on a top 40 station? I don't think so. And so I don't think like the American conception of Ireland has that much to do with Enya at all. Like if we were to make a pie graph and you know, you had James Joyce someplace and you had a sheep and like really great alcohol tolerance and whiskey and like, you know, the Troubles, and you have them all in this like insane, just now I'm just saying things, you know, you have them in this insane pie graph. I think Enya, you know, obviously U2's in there. I think Enya would take up more of a space for you in terms of what you think Americans think.
Yes.
It might not even register on a lot of us. So in other words, it's speaking to insecurities about, you know, oh, do they think that we're almost, you know, do they think that we're just sort of leaving, you know, oh, don't sit there, there's a fairy sitting there or a troll.
Totally. Yeah, it's so interesting because it's like, it's this like circular, it's like this conversation that Ireland is having with America, but America is a sock puppet animated by your own right hand, you know what I mean? So it's like, it's this thing of like, and particularly in that period, I'm talking like, but so by the time I became aware of Enya, so which would have been the late 90s, she was still a thing and she was still recording and she was still somebody who was known for being kind of elusive and strange and magical and stuff. But like, it was the sense of like, this is what Americans think of us. And this is because Ireland was having this huge economic boom at the time. And it was like really like dragging itself into the 21st century. And it was like, look, we have blenders now. You know, it's like there's a McDonald's. We have a Domino's pizza. We are chic. There's chemotherapy available, you know, kind of thing. And then it became the thing.
At the Domino's pizza, which is the weirdest thing. But that's where you get it.
I just have such a strong memory of like when Domino's came to Ireland. I was about 13 or 14 and I was like, we've hit the big time, guys.
Yeah. Still pretty good if you're drunk, but yeah.
Right? Still great. I still love it. I could have it anywhere and still associate it with a kind of glamour of like, guys, we're on the come up.
Yeah.
If you really pizza out of a box, you're on the come up as a nation.
And meanwhile, yeah, I get it. So you're dragging yourself forward. And meanwhile, somewhere back in America, Enya's winning a Grammy, right? It's like early 90s. Oh, actually late 90s you're talking. Yeah. I think she won it in the early 90s.
Yes.
But yeah, so you're thinking that's, yeah, we picked the wrong sort of Irish hero.
But what I find sort of fascinating about this is like, I kind of hit on a little bit earlier, which is the thing of often on this podcast, somebody comes on and like you can really draw a straight line between the work they do now and this work they were fascinated by when they were younger and what they are still fascinated by. And like, I think it's almost more interesting when you kind of can't draw that line, because like everything, like I've enjoyed your work for years and I'm really enjoying your new book called Classic. But like, it's like, I wouldn't like, there's no adjective I would describe about Sloane Crosley's work that I would also describe about Enya's work. It's like your voice as a writer is so direct and frank and like witty and all these wonderful things. But it's like, then you get Enya, that's just like this sort of, this breath on the wind. It's like, you have to just tell it a secret to even know it's there. You know, it's like, and I made me wonder, I was like, you know, you've got Shepherd Moons in your, you've trapped it in the house. You have it, you can listen to it when you sleep. Like, how is it sinking in and melding with the other influences in your life? Like, are you a witchy kid? Are you into unicorns and mermaids? Like, what's
right,
the world?
Right. Oh, I love this question. Well, first of all, you've not heard my new age folk music album, so you have no idea. You have no idea that it is a direct line.
I contain multitudes.
How dare you? But yeah, that's, well, that's got some lovely compliments embedded in it. I think that I did like, I was not a popular kid when I was little, and so I, like a true kid who was once unpopular, I stress like a time limit. You know, like when I was little, don't worry, now it's fine. but yeah, I loved mermaids and unicorns and all that stuff. And, yeah, you know, Pegasi, I should know the plural. Pegasuses? Oof, that's a tough one. But anyway, so sure. But I just feel like I did like, but there's no other comp. Like, I wasn't also listening to, you know, I mean, the other music that's probably coming into my ears at the time is like The Chronic. Do you know what I mean? Mm. It's not like I was listening to whatever, there was no, you know, internet at the time, but whatever would be the suggested other artists to listen to if you like Enya, you know? And I think it's a thing, every once in a while, something sort of falls into your net that does sort of get stuck. So it really is just sort of random. I don't think it has like a huge root system to my creative work, definitely to my childhood, as has, you know, been discussed. But I, something in to this in Cult Classic too, where as a kid, in terms of what I read, it was Alice in Wonderland and, you know, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and The Secret Garden. And I mentioned Labyrinth even naturally earlier.
Yes,
do you know what
yes.
I mean? Like this idea of like the secret portion of your life, you know? And I feel like in the novel, without giving too much away, just, I mean, it's on the flap copy. Everyone's always hesitant to give the following away, but basically, there is a character who is running an upscale mind control cult out of an abandoned synagogue on the Lower East Side. And there's even a moment in the book, if I may, where, you know, when our heroine first sees these other people across the street from her in New York sort of craning their necks with that very, I think it's New York specific. Most things that we think are New York specific are in fact not, because we're egomaniacs. But kind of bitterness and jealousy over, why are you allowed to go into that space? What's in there? Do you live there?
Yes. As a Londoner, I know this feeling, you know, very like, well. That, like, yes.
That just the amount of questions that run through your brain. Is that a new space I should know about? What goes on in there? Is that, you know, an AA meeting? Anything. It doesn't have to be cool. It's just something you want in on, you know? It doesn't have to be an amusement park ride. You just want in on it. And I feel like I can only describe like a soul of magic sounds. and there is something to that, to just sort of alternative worlds. These are sort of fantastical, either overlays or underpinnings, depending on how you look at the books, for a comedy of manners that's dark and wry and, you know, all these things. But like, there's something a little weird in both of them. And I wouldn't necessarily, I'm actually working on the movie of cult classic right now.
Oh my God.
Which
incredible.
Is exciting. I wouldn't necessarily like look at the music supervisor and be like, listen, we're going to do all Enya.
The whole thing.
It's the whole soundtrack.
This whole movie is going to sound like The Lord of the Rings. All of it.
Yeah. And then I'd negotiate down. She's like, maybe one song. I'd be like, great. That's all I actually wanted. Just one song.
Not to, you know, make it too overly simplistic, it is that thing of the unpopular child's dream that there is another place, right?
Yes, yeah. Like, sure. I mean, no one was shoving me into lockers. It's not Saved by the Bell, you know. But
you have to understand, my vision of American friendlessness is that you are constantly have your head in the toilet. But that's just like, that is my impression.
Okay, so we were talking about the Irish-American. I think that it's head in the toilet, but like skirt in the air. Like you have like, you know, your private school or prep school, you know, like the sort of like tartan or plaid skirt,
yes,
and the little tie, and then your head's being shoved in the toilet. So it's a much more elegant toilet shoving than we would have, you know, with our pants down and our like Abercrombie overalls or whatever the hell we were wearing, you know, like.
Right.
But yeah, we had a much more, actually, I always thought that like, the Irish private schools. I think my conception of that comes from, I'm so sorry for this, but probably Angela's Ashes from Frank McCourt.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what I was like. Yeah.
Oh, God.
I was just growing up, people fucking falling down from TB everywhere. I thought I'd just launch into a second about the sort of new age as a thing. Because I find the whole thing quite fascinating, that there was this whole, and actually, weirdly, it made me think of cult classic in a way. Organically, not as a marketing shoo-in, where in the...
That's unfortunate.
In the 60s and 70s, you get this whole sort of like the hippie movement, right? And like, you know, the sort of idea of new thinking, right? Of like Alan Watts and all this sort of like idea that you can, your mind is more powerful than you possibly know, and that you can... Yeah, using meditation to change the world and all that kind of stuff. And then it's like the 80s comes along and like it feels like there was just so many people. And weirdly, I was listening to an interview with somebody who had escaped this cult called the Moonies. I think you're probably familiar with them.
Oh, sure. Yeah well, we use I actually, just not to detract too much, sorry to interrupt, but we use it colloquially. Like join the Moonies.
Yes.
Weirdly, I probably know less about that than I do about Jonestown, Wild Wild Country, you know,
yeah,
Nexium. Like I actually don't even know anything really about the Moonies except for how we use it.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm sort of similar, but I think it's because like not a bunch of people got murdered, so it's like it's fairly low level on the
culture. It's like joining the circus, right?
Yeah, a little
right.
bit.
Yeah.
But he sort of started talking, and it was while I was prepping this episode I heard this. It's like the 60s, 70s, he was this generation that grew up with this kind of concept of we can change the world, and the idea of your mind being more powerful than you think it is, and meditation and all this kind of stuff. And then the 80s coming along, and that sort of screeching to a halt in such a big way, and then sort of Reaganism taking over and it being this, we've all seen the, you know, money, money, money everywhere. Like, you know, just the idea of consumerism and big and hairspray.
Trickle down.
Exactly. We all know the buzzwords. But the idea I had never really quite considered before, that there were these sort of like leftover people who had grown up with these 60s and 70s values, who were now hitting their 30s and 40s, who were like, what happened to us? And that they would like find themselves in this form of music and form of thought called New Age, that, you know, it took a like till the mid 80s until it was really in record shops with its own section, and that like people like Yanni and Enya and Philip Glass or Brian Eno, this idea of the instrumental mood music being a thing for the first time, I find that very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, I would separate, see, Yanni, I actually don't know. It's like, speaking of Enya, I say Caribbean, and most people in the, I know, say
Caribbean.
Yes. But I say it Caribbean because of Enya. It's a very specific,
you're,
like, Caribbean.
You're very,
like,
continental very, and well traveled. It's how
listen, let's just thank you for noticing. But yeah, I feel like that, but Philip Glass is, I know what you mean.
Yeah, Philip Glass is definitely
where
not,
there's
not
that instrumental,
in that. Yeah.
But that's like, I don't know. But it has been accepted more. Like, I don't know who does the opening, the beautiful opening credits to the HBO version of My Brilliant Friend. If you've seen the TV adaptation, there's it's like one of the more stunning pieces. There's a very few pieces of music where you won't skip the credits. Mm. Do you know, I just skip, and instead I'm like, I actually need to listen to this, just this build, this emotional build. And I think that, like, but Yanni is a good example, like Enya, in the sense that he looked ridiculous. And so there was just this very sort of cartoonish, like, nobody at the supermarket looks like that, you know, in any country. That's not a American thing. That's not, you know, nobody at your local shop looks like Yanni or probably Enya. And so I think there is, but that's actually not answering really your question, was not even your question, but is more about, yeah, there was a hard stop of capitalism because you can't really sell it, even though these are best-selling musicians, but the messages that are contained therein, you know, they're great capitalists, these people, but like,
oh yeah, Enya in particular.
But they're massive. Oh my gosh! But their massive fan base, maybe is not. I mean, or they didn't think that there was a space for it, for that sort of deep emotionality and that deep build and getting in touch. And there's also the question of when you listen to it, because you're not listening to this music, you know, in your Beamer driving around Beverly Hills, you know, like, this is like Brett Easton Ellis time, right? So you're not listening to it, you know, or at a party. I mean, I don't know when you're relaxing at all. Like, the 80s just felt like, you know, just so much cocaine. I just don't know when you would, like, I've never tried listening to Enya on drugs, like, not that kind. I think that would be an amazing texturized experience.
There are definitely kinds of drugs that were built for Enya.
Yeah, but you know, speed is not one of them.
I just
feel like, so yeah, culturally, it's interesting.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
interesting, but the cultural pendulum always swings back and forth like that. I think now we're in actually a different moment where no one wants to call it New Age. I feel like New Age also, is it, this is a silly question. I don't even know if it's PC to say this anymore. Is it like saying world music?
Oh, wow.
Do you know what I mean? I know, yeah. I'm sure that, you know, there's a, I probably it's fine. Probably it's still a category in the Billboard music charts. Mm. But, you know, I feel like, is it a sort of ghettoizing of that kind of music, or I don't know.
It does. Now you think about it, it does sort of feel like one of those things that some, like a 21-year-old is going to tell you is like not good.
Not okay.
Yeah, not okay. But for some reason, but the way I sort of like understand it is that like you are using, in definitely in Enya's case, like very new instrumentation. Like she's using a synthesizer. Like that first album was, I think, was all made by machines, right?
And reverb, yeah. The amount of reverb. It's you could choke a mermaid.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, you're using new stuff to create this like otherworldly and older. Like these songs are supposed to be about like landscape and history and like the curvature of the light and like pagans making sort of layered mouth sounds in order to sort of weave their things together. It's like that's supposed to be the vibe you get, but she's doing it using synths in a bedroom. You know, having just come off of this trad band called Clannad. And I find that such a romantic thing of like there being this girl who only sings in Irish with her family and just in her bedroom, she's blinking and plonking on her synths. You know, it's very beautiful to me.
I mean, this is, it's, I guess maybe it's the Irish version of, you know, Steve Jobs or Bill Gates.
She is.
We started a garage. Now look at us. We've ruined the world. Congratulations.
It's like, Enya is that sort of like the female energy of the Steve Jobs ambition of like, no, she just wants to be childless in her castle.
It's true. Well, actually, childless in the castle and like completely enigmatic and almost has a uniform in terms of how she appears in public, does very few interviews.
Which is a fantasy, right?
Like, there's a lot. Well, speaking of, Elena Ferrante and you know, my brilliant friend, I feel like Enya, one of the things I know about her is that she does very few interviews. And I just feel like I have not done the deep dive Google search. I feel like you couldn't even find it if you wanted to. I'm sure, you know, for the first band, it was the Celts, right?
Clannad were the first band she was in.
See,
I've done the deep dive.
I am sorry, the Clannad. Or for her early albums, like Watermark and stuff like that. Like, I wonder if she did do interviews and you just can't find them anymore. Like,
You can definitely find on YouTube sort of like the VHS scar tissue over it of like her just like on some weird BBC spotlight show.
See,
in like
that
1983.
Is good because
I love that.
But I now think like the don't do interviews, like what a privilege. Like, that's the kind of fame. That's such a ridiculous kind of sort of artistic fame, which is fine, and there's nothing wrong with it, and good for you. But it's weird that most people who have it don't pass it off as the coincidence of sales. They pass it off as integrity.
It's
like, I don't
so
do, like Cormac McCarthy, like, oh, no, I don't do, you know, I wouldn't do interviews. I'm like, well, that's quite convenient for you because all you have to do is print an index. Or like your shopping list.
This is going to
get
people. And
you sell so much.
Okay, this, I remember feeling this way. I had to like wrench out my earphones one day because I was so mad because I first of all, I love this author. Everyone loves this author. She's the author everyone loves. Like Zadie Smith was talking about how she doesn't have the internet and doesn't have a real phone and like her friends tell her what's happening on Twitter. And I was like, well, how nice for you.
I have to, I don't know how to do this. Without being totally obnoxious, I am one of the friends who tells her what's happening.
Oh, shut up!
So I am actually feeding...
Well, now I'm not ever getting invited to a dinner party, am I?
No, it's just very funny. I'm like feeding the monster.
Don't
the
tell her
title.
Anymore! She doesn't... She can't stand the heat. She gets to stay out of the kitchen.
She doesn't deserve to know. But I think she has a smartphone now, though. I think we're okay.
Okay, I feel very embarrassed for
No, oh, I didn't mean to embarrass you. I just thought it was so hilarious. Where I'm like, it's not less about embarrassing you or even horribly name dropping, but just admitting my culpability and making this annoying thing worse.
Exactly. But it is those days, and I'm sure you've had them. And like I'm a novelist as well. And I spent the last few years promoting Supernatural YA series, and like that's a lot of like going to teenagers where they are, which is in school, and like
now, which is, I'm sure, to much the thrill of many parents across Ireland, they're in school.
Yeah, oh my god, when that first one came out and they were in COVID, like I didn't know what to do. I was like, do I just give it to them on the street?
Like, wait, like, I feel like theater? Okay, I know you have a point, but I'm also very excited because I feel like you obviously, you probably have a very complicated relationship. When you said fantasy YA, you have a complicated relationship with Anya Shirley. Maybe not.
The thing is, I had never truly listened to her until you suggested it for this podcast. Which is lovely. And there was this thing of like, because by the time I was listening to music, it was, you know, early noughties, late 90s, and she was already this joke. I called my sister and I was like, because she was born 1980, so she would have remembered the entire period. And she was like, oh yeah, nobody actually listened to that stuff. Like, that was just like this sort of...
Yeah, you fell asleep to it.
You fell asleep. She was very, very insistent that like nobody in Ireland actually liked that stuff. It was just a weird export, like a Clannad ring or something, a Clannad ring. And then I started listening to it this week, and my God, did I fall for it. Because like this thing of like, and I'm sure you, in your writing as well, everyone has their own writing rituals, whether they get weirdly superstitious about, like, you know, whether it's like your certain kinds of snacks that you have around you or whatever. But definitely having specific music that I listen to is a thing for me, and it generally is that musical, magical kind of like entering another portal, lots of scores from costume dramas kind of thing. But sticking on Shepherd's Moon the last couple of weeks has been lovely, and I think it's gonna stay, it's gonna become part of my fantasy writer life now.
I hope so.
I pushed it away in the same way up till now I push away things like Terry Pratchett as like existing to this like other generation, and it's like up to me to sort of like, or up to my generation or whatever, to sort of like cut the machete through the long grass and burn it all and start anew kind of thing. But now you go back to Anya and you're like, this really does get you in a place to write about witches.
It must. I mean, I have no idea how many albums she sold, but I want to do one of those things where I'm like, well, you know, 500 million people can't be wrong. And what's weird is that they can. And that's where you get World War II. But I think that aside from that, it is, to me, it's interesting if you can, and then I want to hear about your book, but it's interesting if you can write to it, because for sleep, I will say I have different techniques with it. Like, there are a couple of songs that have almost like a, like the second track has almost a boom to it, where it just feels, it's, things start to speed up. Like, you can imagine it at like a Regency dance. Again, for mermaids, but like just again, like
you know, you feel that like for mermaids. So I rub my chest in circular motions, thinking yum, yum. About it. Yummy, yum.
But I just feel like that will like wake you up if you're not. There's actually that will wake you up if you're not careful. There are a couple of tracks that you have to kind of lower the music. So I could never write to Anya, but I also write different. I mean, it would be ridiculous because then I think I would make fun of it because of the kind of writing I do.
Yeah.
Which has so much, you know, or humor or observation or hopefully observation that gets, you know, comes out as humor. But I think I would then end up, in order to block it out, like making fun of it in my mind.
Oh, so what do you listen to when you write then, if anything?
Nothing.
Really?
I'm really finicky about sound. I get very, which is why, again, that I've always been this way. That first moment when my cousin said, oh, I listen to music to fall asleep, even as a little kid who worshipped her, was like, oh boy, here we go. You know, like, I don't want to listen to what, like gong sounds or frogs or like any of that. Brown noise, white noise, you know, anything is not, I'm not a fan. I basically need like
total silence.
The birds to tone it down a little too. Like, stop being so desperate. Shh. Like, so I need, I don't need total silence. Like, it's not like if someone is in the next room and drops their pen, I'm going to freak out. I just don't need to listen to music, or like it. But you do.
I do. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. But it is that thing of like listening to specific, because I do different kinds of writing, it being like specific music to get into specific things. Like, this is embarrassing, but there's like, have you ever heard of Alan Watts?
No.
He was like this guy in the 70s that brought like I can't believe I'm saying this on a podcast. He brought like transcendental meditation to.
You can edit this out.
I can edit this out. He brought like TM to the US from India. He was like one of these great pilgrims of the early 60s. And he did a bunch of like a lot of motivational speaking about like the spirit and all that kind of shit. And then a lot of that has been set to music. And it's just that around and around, three books.
Wow.
Which is weird because you wouldn't sort of think that someone's speaking voice, like a gruff man's very English speaking voice, just speaking about you.
I've seen the David Attenborough of like nature videos.
That kind of vibe. Yeah. And I just fucking sink in, man. When it's going really
and
well.
And that's the thing, Chico, I was about to say, you probably, you know, there's this sense of not wanting to stop mid-sentence on like normal music. And so I wonder if it helps you write for longer.
Yes.
Like you got over the initial hurdle of being able to listen to something while you write. I've never gotten over it, I feel like there's something, speaking of like a hidden door, there's something waiting for me on the other side. If I can just find the kind of music that would help me write for longer or concentrate, you know, like, you know, nature's Ritalin. I don't know.
Nature's Ritalin. what was your relationship? Speaking of like going into different like portals and stuff with this music, like, what was your relationship to the music videos? Because they are specific as hell and sound like, look like exactly how they sound.
So is it, I've seen clips of the videos for Enya where it's like, it's just sort of like a dissolve, right? It's like a dissolve of one image over the other. You have like a castle, a battle. Like, I mean, I think that you'll be happy to know that the reason why I don't really have a fluency in the videos is not because I don't have an interest. It's because I have seen clips of them and thought, this is probably a nightmare for Irish people. Do you know? It's just like, here's some stuff. Here's a video of Kid Rock, and it's an American Eagle, and he's punching a beer. And then it's just a bunch of people, you know, protesting abortion and littering. And that's what we do. I can't imagine what it would look like to an Irish person.
Yeah, it is. But the thing is,
but are there unicorns in them?
There are unicorns. There's a lot of like, if you've ever seen that Robin Williams movie, What Dreams May Come, where he goes to heaven and like they've sort of made everything's a painting. It's like a lot of that. It's like, there's like, oh, suddenly there's like all these sprites and nymphs, and then suddenly like a Victorian man with a big camera comes in and then walks off again. It's like intentionally supposed to be this dreamscape, but like dreams that no actual people have that maybe Oscar Wilde had once, you know?
Right. Probably not. But yeah, but he's, I have to say, I think that that kind of thing that is just sort of, it's A, of its time. It's like what the production quality was, you know, they're just sort of, we have very few toys to play with in terms of, you know, special effects, and we're just going to use them all. You know, there's just not that many crayons in the box. And so I think therefore, like a lot of stuff at that time, a lot of music videos, you know, probably bounce off each other in that way. But I feel like the imagery behind it, I just never had that thing. And not to pivot too much, I just haven't seen that many of the videos. But I studied away, actually, not because of Enya, in Scotland. Not
definitely not because of Enya.
Not Ireland.
Definitely because of Enya.
You're like, are you listening to what you're saying now when you speak? Like, no, I think, but I really enjoyed, and that's why I'm like hyper, I think, familiar with like, maybe not your sensitivity, but what you're saying is a sensitivity, or your sister's sensitivity, or dismissal of Enya, the vibe, the imagery, the sort of like a cultural context or school, a new age school she comes from, because like you said, it's got all these, you know, women like basket weaving or, you know, this like very Irish, you know, thing. And I felt very much living in Scotland, that great texture between like, oh yeah, what do, like Americans come and they expect us to be like so adorable, and they've like what read Harry Potter and like J.M. Barrie, you know,
yes,
and like
yes.
it's not all castles in the sky. And it was sort of interesting to witness, and again, totally different place than Ireland, but I just feel like
you're very good. Yes, totally different, but in many ways very the same. Like,
well, I guess
say that as like, an Irish person, they're very similar cultures.
I can't say that. Well, I've been to both. Yeah. I mean, I think one of the prettiest places I've been to where I was like, oh, no wonder Enya exists, was the Cliffs of Moher. I'm like, well, does it.
Well, there you go.
You know, but similarly in Scotland, they're like, we're, you know, it's not like we have castles jutting up in the middle of the city, and you're sort of point. You're like, well, like you do. But that sort of texture between, you know, modernization and being contemporary and moving forward and wanting to, like, you gotta pick what you slough off, you know, it can't be the very best parts. And I think that that's like that rejection of like the imagery in those videos. I mean, unicorns don't exist in any country, so let's just put a pin in them. but
we don't know that yet, Sloan.
That's true. That's true.
We are young as a species, and the unicorns will reveal themselves when we're ready.
Much like my new age folk album, which will be coming out in 2023.
The unicorns will reveal themselves.
Will reveal themselves, yeah.
That's the name of the album. But I'm very interested in this because to go back to this question of like nationhood, which we seem to be circling around a lot, it's fun. Obviously, America is like this country that's like let's just having a moment, like having a stressful transitionary phase. Let's say,
should we revoke it? It being the country, I don't know. These are questions we ask.
But when like I know I've had this circular kind of moment with Irish identities, particularly because I'm Irish, but I live in London, and this thing of like these things that I tried to slough off very quickly when I arrived here because I didn't want to be associated with the kind of Enya adjacent vibe, or, you know, like, but then living here a long time, realizing I'm gonna live here for much longer probably, and then feeling a sense of homesickness and also of pride and of wanting to reclaim these things, and like reading about like the pagan sort of days and like all and all this kind of Celtic shit, and kind of weirdly getting back into it again, which I do think happens as you get a bit older, which is it kind of just advances again, and then you get like my dad, for example, is obsessed with ancestry.com and that kind of stuff, and like it eventually goes full circle and you just sort of are obsessed with your own past and don't live in the present at all. But like how when you're an American right now do you reclaim like a prideful, nice feeling about your heritage?
Well, for one thing, I will say I just had an immediate rush of the same kind of jealousy of like, oh, wow, when you do ancestry.com, you can probably get so far.
Yeah.
I bet you can. It's like if you ever, I mean, really the people who can get far is if you ever get into like a cab in Stockholm, like the cab driver is like can trace his family back 700 years, and that's a cab driver. So you're like, okay, great. Well, that's nice. I don't know where I come from or what I'm doing. I was just plopped down here. So, I mean, it's really hard. And I think it's why we tend to gravitate towards, well, on a sort of micro level, it's why we all Americans tend to gravitate towards pop culture, I think, in a very disproportionate way, because this is what formed us in so many ways. Like this is art history and it's sort of embarrassing because it's all rented and it's all borrowed. But I have a complicated relationship with it because I've always been from just outside New York. I grew up about 20 minutes north of here. And you know, us in Texas, a lot of discussion that these are different countries within this country for different reasons. Or I guess maybe California. But I feel like, to me, I think I have felt in a non-panicky, non-melodramatic way more connected to being Jewish these days than I have in the past, because I am all the time, all Jewish, all the time. I'll be here all week. But both grandparents everywhere. And I feel like, this has been going on for a long time. I mean, I remember I went to a friend's house for Rosh Hashanah, and she is very, very Jewish, very Orthodox. No phones, everything for for Passover is covered in tinfoil, which will make sense. But basically, and it was the night that Ruth Bader Ginsburg died. Oh. And a friend walks in, and she goes, oh my God, you guys. And we thought it was sort of boy drama, I have a story. That kind of tone, like, oh my God. she walks in and she's like, RBG just died. And then boom, cut the phones. So we didn't have phones for dinner. And the conversation at that table is one I'm going to remember for a long time. And now it's how religious they are and where they come from and where their family is. But it was the first time we had a real conversation of like, I don't know. No one wants to be ridiculous. But no one wanted to be ridiculous in like 1932 in Germany, And it's like, are we having that conversation?
Wow.
And I don't really think it's, bad is a weird measurement and way too general and childlike. But like, I don't think it's that bad. I don't think I need to leave the country necessarily. If I get property in Canada, it's because of global warming. And so you should do consider it. But I think it's a little more than hand-wringing right now is the answer, I guess, to the mood of the country. And that was a while ago. And it's only gotten, some things have gotten better, but mostly it's gotten worse. And it's really, I don't think that we're grappling with our heritage because it's not in the past. Our problems are so right now. It's not like I come from a people who did very bad things a long time ago, and that's something that we have to think about, reparations, and we have to think about all these things. We just keep doing them. And so how do you love this massive superpower problem child? The Canadians have a good sense of humor about it. The Mexicans are threatening to build a wall right back. Like, like really? We're not that psyched about you guys. Like, okay. you're so egotistical and delusional. But it's still all those wonderful things. I mean, it still is a place for a better life for so many people. It is still, a magnificent country. It's just so buried and difficult right now. I don't know. It's hard to talk about because it's very heartbreaking. I don't know what to do.
And I also appreciate that, like, far away from Enya, but like I also just
I envy the country where she wherever she is. Sounds nice.
But the only reason I bring it up is that it's all I think about lately, because obviously we receive so much US news ever think is, and I've obviously got quite a few American friends over here, and all I think about is like how do they keep their hearts from breaking every day, because when something sad happens in Ireland, like I remember when I moved here, and this was still this kind of time where like it felt like every other week there were women who were like dying because of not being able to access abortions, and people would talk about Ireland here in this way of like, how can we bring them into the 21st century kind of thing a little bit. And I remember feeling so ashamed for years, and all this stuff as well. And so I just remember that feeling so well. And so when I hang out with Americans, I know that it can be so grinding, like this sort of, I don't know. I don't really know.
But
what
also,
I'm
isn't the thing with abortion in Ireland? what a great segue. Isn't the thing with abortion?
Very Seinfeld entry.
Don't you just hate it when it's so dark? Sorry.
No,
but isn't
it's
the thing
great.
That it was sort of legalized and then criminalized again?
No, it was criminalized for a long time, and then it was decriminalized.
It was decriminalized
in 2018.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, for some reason I thought there was either talk of criminalizing. I somewhere on the periphery of my vision is the idea that like it's going to be a problem again.
Oh God! Don't tell me that.
I'm sorry. Listen, I am not an Irish news source. It's completely don't listen to me.
I feel like we've gone all over the map, but I've really, really enjoyed chatting. It's been really fun.
It was so fun. Thank you. I mean, I feel like. you know, to prepare for this, not that you need to remind yourself of something that, not even that I love, I don't know if I would like make other people listen to Enya, but it's just so ingrained and part of my sort of, auditory diet, I guess. I listened to it last night. I was like, I'm going to listen to it so I can, I wasn't sure how this was going to go. And I thought, well, I want to be familiar with all the tracks. You know, just the order of them and speak as if I know what I'm talking about. And I fell asleep right away.
Oh, right away. Like a
right
little
away.
Baby.
Like a little baby, which is sad because I think the last track on that album is one of the more, that's a real Cliffs of Moher, you know.
Yeah. You know, but the thing like, is, that album, kind there's, of there's so much range, man. There is like this kind I of know. Like, that sort of chanty one where it's like, ba 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 da ba, and it just sounds like lots of women.
The march one.
The march. Yeah, yeah.
The march one. Yeah, yeah. It's like a march. It to me, it sounds like yes, like a get ready to get your bow and arrow ready.
Yes, it feels very like brave, harsh.
Yeah,
and very that era as well of like just a lot of sort of like quasi Celtic stuff coming out. But then you have. A lot, then you have a song that could sound like a Dido song, you know? It's like, I feel like there's a lot of range within the
there
Enya
is.
Canon.
I don't think I think she wrote most of them, but there's, or maybe can she collaborated with, and that could mean many things. I don't want to take away songwriting credit from Enya and have her come down from her castle and kill me. But like,
she could do,
and no one would miss me. She is just so powerful.
Who would tell Zadie about Twitter?
There's like seven of us, honestly, that will tell. Someone will tell me. You know what? Enya will kill me, take the mantle.
And, just, and the weird thing is, I don't know Zadie Smith and I don't know Enya, but I feel like they'd get on. You know, I feel like they'd have a lot to say to each other.
Well, I do think people who have had, who have become sort of, whether it's positive or negative, sort of fodder for society and become cartoons of themselves. Mm-hmm. And who cannot walk into a situation without more than a normal amount of perception about them in advance. And sometimes it's great, you know, probably for both of them. And sometimes it's a misery. And I actually do think that there's something psychological that I certainly cannot have that conversation, but you know, maybe call me when this book becomes a huge hit and I'll tell you what it's like,
which it will be. And what I love about this new book of yours is of Caucasic. I'm just at the point where you described earlier on of the her discovering that her sort of ex-boss and ex-colleague are involved in this mind control cult that also centers around her. It's this thing of like we talk about it is a sort of like morality, not a morality, but a kind of a parable about modern dating, isn't it? And this thing, and like, and what we do with all the love that we discard after we fall in love with people, and nobody has a good answer to that, and everyone wants it to be like, oh well, you carry it with you, but you kind of don't. You kind of just like lose bits of yourself to these people along the way, and there's all of that. But it's like, in dating, we get so convinced that everyone is judging our actions all of the time, and everyone's thinking about us. And in this book, that's true, and I find that very validating.
All your worst nightmares. I mean, I feel like there is a sort of itch that gets scratched. You know, that like, again, not to belabor it, but like that room you don't want to look behind is like, well, are people thinking about me? Am I thinking about them? Do I have no taste, control? Do I have no ability to get closure? You know, like you sort of like, oh God, people are actually... But in the end, I mean, it ends up having sort of a positive lesson in a way, but it's a sort of snarky road to get there. But yeah, she keeps running into all of her ex-boyfriends as long as she steps within a 5-block radius of this building, this sort of quote unquote magical, it's not magical, it's more speculative fiction, but like this sort of magical building. And she has to ask herself, would she do it? And I think you would do it. That's what's funny is a lot of the response to the book have been these questions of like, oh, you know, well, would you do it if you were presented with the opportunity and if you were in her position, which is she's engaged but unsure, to run it, like basically open up your phone and look through every text exchange where you've said something embarrassing or someone else has said something embarrassing, but sort of in real life, which is what it is to run into an ex every night in this sort of Groundhog Day fashion. But it reminds me, and this will sort of dovetail with some of the other references I think we've made, of the Grimm's fairy tales, which if you ever read the original ones, are horrific.
Oh, yeah.
Like Cinderella's sisters can't slicing get into off their the feet. Shoe because they slice, the, one slices off the feet. Oh. But it's very, like, rapey. It's a very, like let's think about Sleeping Beauty and where that could go. You know, the whole thing is so nuts. And I remember talking to a German friend once, and he said, but yeah, it confirms your worst fears as a kid. You know, you're worried there's a monster hiding in the closet and your parents tell you, no, there's no monster. Don't worry about it. But there is something, this messed up, I keep saying it, sort of a scratched itch of saying, yes, there is a monster. His name is Herman. This is what he looks like. Wave, Herman. You know, I mean, this is sort of like the Pixar concept of it, you know, but of just knowing that, like, your exes are, some of them don't think about you. Some of them miss you. Some of them are quietly judging you. And now you get to run into the mall in this novel in a concentrated time frame.
You know what? I think I would do it. I think there are still...
I would do it.
We would all... That's it. Every woman would do it.
Every man who reads this book is like, ew.
Like, why on earth? Yeah, why on earth? But I think men in this generation are afraid of their past girlfriends in a way that they haven't been before. I think they're just like always waiting to be outed for something. You mean,
well,
even the nicest men.
Yeah, well, that fear of, I mean, not to make it too big, but that sort of abject gut level fear of women is why America is in the political situation it's in right now. So it's all funny.
Yeah.
It's all, sorry to be weird, but it's all fun and games until, you know, people start dying. But but on a dating level, it's quite funny. Yeah, sure.
Shit. Well, the Zoom is saying that we have less than a minute left, but this is a very weird place to leave it.
Well, if you want to escape, if you want a little bit of escapism, that's why God made Enya.
There you go. We did it, Sloan.
Yay.
Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you for having me. It was a
wonderful.
Joy.
We're going to get shut off by Zoom any second now, but please send me your thingy and I'll follow up by email.
I will. Okay, you too. Bye.
Bye.
This has been Sentimental Garbage and I've been Caroline O'Donoghue. The podcast was produced and edited by me, with mix and music by Harry Harris and artwork by Gavin Day. If you'd like to email me about the pod, you can do so on sentimentalpod@gmail.com or get in touch with me directly on Twitter or Instagram @Zaraline.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.